Committee for March 9th, 2007 will come to order. Today, colleagues, we have a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 13, and we'll open the public hearing. Go ahead and give us a quick summary of the measure.
Mr. Chair and members, House Joint Resolution 13 is a provision to amend the Oregon Constitution if the voters should so approve. What the bill does is to allow the state to issue general obligation bonds up to 0.5% of the real market value of property in the state. It would require that the bond proceeds be used to match school district general obligation bonds that are approved by the voters in the school district. And those bonds would have to be approved. The school district bonds would have to be approved for capital costs. And then it also mentions potential sources of revenue to handle the debt obligation that selling bonds would incur. It mentions the general fund appropriations from other allocations or other funds that are available. But it is clear that the repayment funds could not come from property taxes. It also creates a new capital school matching fund, and it repeals the existing capital matching subaccount in the education stability fund. So this would be a replacement for that matching subaccount. And then it directs the 15% of net lottery proceeds to the new fund rather than to the old subaccount when the education stability fund is capped out. So it just shifts the money from going to one fund to the other. It requires that the new fund be used to provide matching funds to school districts for capital costs or to repay state bonds issued for the capital matching grants. And it also has a definition for capital costs as those associated with the acquisition, construction, improvement, remodeling, maintenance, or repair of pre-K to grade 12 public school buildings. It would be submitted to the voters in May of 2008, and it would allow roughly up to about $2 billion in bonds if the full authority would be used.
Based on that 0.5%?
Correct.
Right. Good. Thank you. Any questions about the summary? I note that Representative Hunt, one of the sponsors of the bill, is in the room. Representative, would you like to be heard?
Please. For the record, State Representative Dave Hunt, Chair Barnhart, members of the committee. Nice to see you all today. Good work yesterday. You all look very relaxed and calm today.
After a good night's sleep.
After a good night's sleep.
We're happy.
Well, the bill before you, and I would also note you should have testimony before you. I know from State Treasurer Randall Edwards, and I think also from Representative Chuck Burley. Do you have that one before you?
We have a letter from Edwards, and
I got one from Burley.
Do you have one from Burley? I haven't received it yet.
It may have come to your office.
It came to my office.
Okay.
So, same, all in support of HGR 13. This is actually identical to HGR 11 from last session and identical to another bill that I can't remember the number of that was actually sponsored by, I believe, Lane Shetterly and Ben Westland in the 2003 session. So, and State Treasurer Edwards is, I believe, the original brainchild behind this idea. It's really a very simple concept. In the Oregon Constitution, right now, we have a whole series of things that the state is authorized to issue capital bonds for. And you can see those listed out in the Constitution. It's categories A through O. Currently, this would add category P. So another category that would really just give us some options. We already have a provision set up through the Education Stability Fund where dollars flow from the lottery into the Education Stability Fund once that fills. The 5% of the general fund dollars are already scheduled to continue to flow into what is now called the capital subaccount. This bill would set that up in a slightly different way, but the same exact flow. So the dollars are going to be there from that source, at least. Hopefully we'll come up this session with some other ways to get some additional dollars in there as well. But even if we do nothing this session, dollars are going to flow once the Education Stability Fund fills up within the next couple of years. And so this really gives us an option once what to do with those dollars. Currently, we would only be authorized to give those dollars out. Let's say $30 million goes into that account in a given biennium. The state today would only be authorized to give that money out to school districts. Well, you can't build a heck of a lot of capital around in school construction with $30 million. But with the authorization to bond that money, all of a sudden you end up with a pot of money to do things that are very legitimate for bonding purposes. It would, again, it couldn't be used for school operating funds. It could only be used for capital construction. Much as the state already does through some of the other categories that we currently have for universities, for community colleges, for veterans' homes, for a whole variety of other things, this would give us one additional option. So this bill doesn't actually appropriate any new money. It merely gives the voters a chance to amend the Constitution to authorize the bonding of those funds. So it really is good for schools, an opportunity to help create some safer and more adequate facilities, which are a critical need in all of our districts. And it's one of those issues that really does bind together districts, whether they are low-growth districts or high-growth districts. They all have aging facilities. High-growth districts have an additional challenge of the need for new capacity to deal with that high growth. But it also really is an opportunity to start thinking ahead about the future, for the state to step up and start playing a more thoughtful role in how we help assist schools deal with capital needs. They are woefully inadequate. They've fallen way behind. And this, I think, is one of several bills this session that we're going to have the opportunity to step up and demonstrate that the state should play a role in that process. This, I will tell you, is probably the easiest one in the package of bills that are coming, because there are lots of other issues related to school impact fees and election reform and actually appropriating dollars and lottery changes that are coming, which are going to be much more challenging and potentially controversial. So this, I believe, is the low-hanging fruit, and that's not a reason not to do it. I think we should do it, send it out to the voters, and allow them to give the state a tool to bond and to help begin to give districts some assistance with their capital needs. And I will stop there, Mr. Chair.
Great. Thank you. Questions for Representative Hunt? I have several, and it's probably because I'm not as familiar with this proposal as you obviously are. The first one I have is maybe a constitutional question, and that is: is there a single subject issue in this measure? And the reason I'm wondering is because we're adding a new section, Article 11P, and then we're also in this. We're also amending Article 15, if I read that correctly, to essentially remove the portion of that article that refers to the education, the capital account as the overflow, the sub account within the Education Stability Fund, on line 34, page 4 of this bill. And you're substituting on line 12, page 4, this new section. So you actually, I wonder if we are we doing two things in this, or are we actually doing only one?
Mr. Chair, that's an excellent question. Legislative Council did not give us back any.
Paul has answered,
it requires the two-thirds.
Paul has answered
that
my question.
That is because it's the revision.
It
yes.
is a revision because it has two subjects.
Yeah.
It is two subjects.
Yeah. In line two on page one, it does note that this does require 40 votes.
Two-thirds. Okay.
And I know this committee loves bills that require 40 votes, so this was a very
logical
one.
We seem to be a magnet for them, don't we?
Fortunately, this is one that requires 40 votes but has nothing to do with raising revenue, so... You'd be happy to know that, Mr. Chair.
I'm very pleased. Thank you. Then the other question that I had, and as someone who lives in a legislative district where there's a lot more school population growth than I have in mine, I've got one district that is growing rapidly, many other districts that are slowly declining in enrollment, and are in the replacement of buildings business, but not in the business of trying to build new schools, completely new schools. This, as you pointed out, will soon be receiving a substantial amount of money from the lottery, just based on the way the overflow account's designed, the sub-account's designed to work, is the need adequate sufficient to utilize that money within the definition here, which is K-12 school buildings?
Mr. Chair, if you're asking if the dollars that are going to flow into that account are going to be adequate to meet the need, absolutely not.
I was asking the opposite
question. The opposite question.
But I think you've answered
it. Okay, yes. Yeah, there will be, which is why I think you're going to see other bills that have already been proposed that will be heard later this session. Because there is clearly a complete lack of dollars. Even if you anticipate the best case scenario of the lottery generating lots of money, and all that overflows, and we never need to tap the Education Stability Fund, it's still hard to imagine a scenario where we would have adequate dollars to begin matching. You know, this is referred to as potential matching funds in this context. That does not envision, certainly in the short term, that being a 50-50 match. I think that's a great long-term vision to get to the place where we would match local districts 50-50, but there just aren't going to be adequate dollars in the short term to do that. But the need, again, both in terms of just aging facilities in all districts, as well as the need for additional capacity in new districts, mm-hmm. is so great that we're just going to begin to scratch the surface.
Okay. And the term match doesn't refer to anything, any particular percentage. That would be established by law, I assume.
Or I believe it'll be an issue for another day in the legislature. It could be established in statute, Mr. Chair, or it could be delegated to the education Department of Education for them to set a percentage.
Again, by legislation to carry out the provisions of the article under Section 6 on page 2. Okay, now it also appears to me that this would establish a set of laws that could be adopted by the legislature but would not be subject to the initiative or referendum requirements, since this article supersedes any conflicting provisions of the Constitution. I don't know if anyone's thought about that or if it's even an issue, but have I generated any other questions?
Well, I have questions, but they aren't particularly for Representative Hunt. They're more staff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Staff questions. All right. And maybe that
I'm not going to make him be the absolute
here. And that was probably a staff question, the one I just asked. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, yeah. I will raise the issue that it would probably take additional language or another bill to actually move the money from the old sub-account to the new account.
Could that be done by law if this passed?
I would think so, yes. But there's no specific language in the bill to do that.
Yes, and Mr. Chair, that's my understanding as well, that could be done statutorily by the legislature.
Okay. All right.
This is basically the one piece, because the state currently is not constitutionally authorized to issue bonds for K-12 capital construction.
Right.
This would give us the ability to do that, to take advantage of that very effective tool to really maximize the dollars that could be invested in K-12 capital.
Right. And I think members are aware that this comes from the constitutional requirement that the state not borrow more than $50,000, except, and now we have exceptions down through O, and this would establish a new one.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Representative Hunt. We appreciate
your
appearance today.
Enjoy your afternoon.
Yes, sir. Is there further testimony on this bill? Yes, please come forward.
Good afternoon, Chair Barhart and committee members, Lori Wimmer-Whalen with the Oregon Education Association. And you're about to be handed out a document that represents the position of a coalition of education advocates in this building with respect to capital construction proposals in general, of which this is one. And we have five that we generally support. Our bottom line thresholds were to create new revenue, not simply rename and repurpose existing funds and call the problem solved, recognizing that we have both the high growth and, as you've heard, also declining enrollment districts and low property wealth per student districts that have infrastructure issues that are every bit as critical. We believe that the general obligation bonding bill before you is a good one with respect to creating a new tool for funding capital construction. And while we wouldn't have used the matching subaccount, the capital subaccount to do the debt service, we would have left some flexibility there. We would certainly support this bill. We would suggest, however, that there be some sort of provision for low property wealth per district, school districts, to be able to access these resources if the legislature should choose to enact something in a subsequent legislature that would enable, let's say, the bottom 25% of school districts as measured by property wealth per district, per student, not having to have a match, so that you have those very poor areas able to also meet their capital needs without having to come up with local resources, because frankly we don't see that happening for a variety of reasons, mostly because the local citizens probably don't have the wherewithal to vote yes on a bond. So with that one proviso, we would otherwise be in support of the bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, Dana Hepper, statewide advocacy coordinator with Stand for Children and a former third grade teacher. And we also support the bill and are a part of the coalition that supports the five concepts that you have in front of you. I just wanted to say quickly, as a former third grade teacher, I taught at a school that was built for 476 kids. We added seven portable classrooms so that the capacity was 546, and we were serving 600, which is additional two classrooms if you do the quick math. Not sure how we manage that, but as the advocacy coordinator for Stand for Children and as a former teacher, I'm just really thrilled that the legislature is considering and acting on a series of bills that will help us address our school facilities needs. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, echo the comments made by my predecessors here. The other piece to add for local boards is that they're increasingly facing a competitive environment when they're going out for their bonds and finding it difficult facing the voters who are looking at competing bonds for community colleges, parks, districts, you name it, all the other facility needs around the state. And I think that this provides them another tool to have that conversation with their voters to say, you know, for every dollar we can expend for our building, we're going to get a match from the state, you know, to build our new high school or to put a new roof on or what have you. I will highlight in the treasurer's remarks that he submitted that the estimated $2.4 billion worth of deferred maintenance costs. This is not even new construction. Mm-hmm. Just to highlight the really crumbling facilities needs around the state, you find that in school districts, oftentimes the operational dollar will trump the capital dollar simply because of the desperate need to keep the program operational, and that leaky roof will get pushed off for another year, or the new grandstand or what have you often gets pushed down the road and doesn't end up getting fixed. And so that's why you have that $2.4 billion in deferred maintenance costs around the state. So I just can't speak more highly in favor of this type of legislation that will help districts to begin to address those needs.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? I have one, and I suspect the Oregon School Boards Association may be best to answer this, and you may not be able to today. I do know that in Measure 47 and 50, there are definitions of capital construction or capital account that's very limited. And therefore there are things that districts need to do that have to come out of operating funds, whether they want to do it that way or not. I'm assuming that the definition in Section 5 of capital costs is broader than that, and that it actually will accomplish the things that districts ought to be able to do from what we would normally think of as capital accounts. Is that your understanding, or do we need to look at that some more?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'll take another look at it, but that was my understanding. You're absolutely correct that currently, under a district's own bonding authority, they are restricted on the type of capital projects that they can bond for, and oftentimes a lot of maintenance, deferred maintenance projects that may end up running a couple hundred thousand or more of one-time capital costs to the district have to come out of operational dollars because of that definition in 47 and 50. And my understanding was that this is broader language, but I'd be happy to take a refresher look at it as well.
Okay. And thank you. My own question just generated another question for me, and that is this issue where are we talking about how we share the money here? As a capital matching fund, if we have different definitions for what the district can spend their bond money on because of Measure 50, then the definition here, we may need to look at whether this term capital matching is the correct term or whether we need something mm-hmm. else. The reason I raise that is that if their bonding allows them to spend money in a category, and the matching account can actually be spent on a larger category, we may have a situation where they can't match from the bond fund for certain categories of expenditures.
Right.
In this particular account, for example, maintenance is included on line 21, page 2, as an item that are included in capital costs. And I know that that's much more limited in Measure 50. So we'll have to look into that. I mean, is this a real issue, do you think? Is this something we should look into? We should get the legal eagles to look into.
I definitely think so, yeah.
So that whatever we end up with in this matching language, the legislature can, by law, deal with those items that cannot be covered under Measure 50 but could be covered under the definition of capital costs here. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Chair, also I would point out that in the facilities grant there is a small, very small amount of money that is set aside for those things that happen to a classroom that are part of for example, if you build a science lab, you still have to buy the science equipment, or
right.
the computer lab, the computer equipment. And those dollars were created explicitly for covering some of those things that you can't bond for. And so you might want to be a little bit more inclusive with respect to those dollars being counting towards the match as well. Well,
that's an interesting thought, right? And that's part of our appropriation, isn't it?
Right.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Just more. If we're putting something in the Constitution, we have to be really careful to make sure we get it right the first time. Otherwise, we go back for an election to do it again. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. Are there others who would like to be heard on House Joint Resolution 13? Committee members, do you have thoughts you'd like to share today?
Can I ask staff some?
Sure.
Steve, could you provide us at some point an update on where the Ed Stability Fund numbers look like right now? And it's 18% going in automatically, correct?
18%.
And when it's filled, then 15% automatically goes into the sub-account.
Correct.
And basically what this does, if I understand it correctly, is it just takes that sub-account was never adequately fleshed out. Because I guess what I'm looking at, you know, if the economy clicks along, when's it going to kick in is one of the things that I'm sort of looking at. I would like to have some idea of, you know, we have revenue projections for the next couple of biennium, how close are we getting to this kicking in is sort of the question. And how much would go in? Is there any upper limit? Doesn't sound like it. It just goes on forever? And those are the kinds of questions that I have, is what looking, and I could see Paul ready to jump up here and answer all these questions.
Mr. Werner.
He had it.
We do track, of course, each of the forecasts, and we are expecting before the end of the 2009-11 biennium to hit that 5% cap. Remember, it's 5% of the prior biennium's general fund revenue. And oddly, our revenue in 2007-09 actually goes down because of the kicker. So the target goes down a little bit, but we hit the 5% in 2009-11 based on our projections, and it would be somewhere in that last 6 months, I think, is when it would most likely occur. So probably the next to last transfer of that quarter.
And then it would drop to 15% into this account, and if this passes, that would just in perpetuity grow at 15% of lottery. There's no...
Well, that the allocation, though, is considerably different. A majority vote could allocate that capital account on a biennial basis. It doesn't require the three-fifths of the triggers the way the stability fund does.
We would have to enact, Mr. Chair, then, if we got this constitutional change, then that really is my question. How do we control this thing if we got this change, and who controls it and how? I mean, when this thing was enacted in 2001, really, was when we started with this, didn't we, Paul?
It was Representative Berger, it's 2002.
Yeah, it was sort of like, gee, maybe someday we might have something. Well, that someday may be coming, so some really important questions have to be asked about what are the sidebars, I guess... Under if we pass this, are those questions going to be left to legislative and authorized by simply legislative action? Okay, just looking at the cookie jar and trying to figure out. Okay.
Thank you. This amendment does limit, doesn't it, the way in which the legislature can spend the money. I'm looking here to see where it says that.
What are you looking for?
We can transfer money into the school capital construction fund, section 4 sub 2. We can appropriate money.
Sub 3 on the first page.
Sub 3 on the first page.
Sub 3, yeah,
I saw it. The proceeds from bonds issued under this section may be used only to provide matching funds to finance the capital costs of school districts that have received voter approval for local general obligation bonds and to provide for the costs of issuing bonds, including the payment of debt service. Okay, so there's the limitation. And capital costs are defined in Section 5.
Correct.
Yep. Yes, ma'am.
And another important question, in the Educational Stability Fund, supposing that it fills and then we need to take it, then does it come out of this account back to 18% under the current? Or what happens then?
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, it's my understanding that once the money is in the sub-account, it can't go back into the regular account.
Yeah, but the automatic transfer that we have now of 18%, I mean, suppose we spent money from the education, we actually...
From the education fund.
The education fund.
The stability fund.
Yes.
Okay, we actually grabbed it because we had that need. Then does this stop, the feed stops here and it constitutionally then goes back into that, back at 18%?
18% would start flowing back into the education stability.
And then it would have to refill before this account. Okay, just making sure.
Well, you've just identified another complexity, because if we have encumbered this account for 20 years as a matching fund for a local bond measure,
And it stops
filling, then we could end up with financial problems in this account
while
we refill the Education Stability Fund. So I think there's some additional work that needs to be done on this measure before we send it out.
Well,
we've identified at least three or four different issues.
Mr. Chair, I'm really glad we're working on this, because this has been winging. My third round in the on the revenue committee of what are we going to do about this? We need better definition and understanding. So thank you for having this, because it does need some clear resolution.
Well, by statute, we may have to be careful not to encumber the account when we're not certain we are going to actually have the money
right
in the account.
Well, I kind of have a feeling the bond
companies
will have something to say about that when they read the constitutional provisions and say, no, wait a minute, you could grab it and not fill it. And
that would be an interesting little problem.
I think a discussion with the treasurer's office around that would be helpful.
I agree with you. Could we schedule another hearing later and invite the treasurer to come and discuss these issues with us, or his assistant who works on them? Thank you. Is there anything else to come before the public hearing today? Thank you, Representative Hunt. Thank you, other witnesses. We appreciate your help with this matter, and we'll close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 13. And I think we've exhausted our agenda for the day, and therefore we are adjourned.
You took my question.